Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. And I am Mo, joined by Mr. Brett Podcast over here. And we have on a man. Let me see. He's a lead singer of a band that I suppose we have a little bit of interest in, to say the least. Legends of the Sunset Strip, LA Guns, who have a new album out, The Devil You Know, March 29th from Frontiers Music. Phil Lewis, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
It's my pleasure, Brett. Thank you, Mo. How you guys doing?
We're awesome. I mean, I got to tell you, Phil, we have been with LA Guns pretty much ever since you started, you started in the band. I just remember the early days, picking up the first album, picking up Cocked and Loaded. Yep, we've been with you the whole time.
I can hear it in your voices. That's great. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, we totally want to talk about the new album, but yeah, I have one little story because, I can't even remember the year, but you had just released Cocked and Loaded, and you were in Calgary, Alberta, and you were doing a signing at the HMV, and so that was a great moment because I was able to grab the cassettes, man, you know, the cassettes of LA Guns, right?
Yeah. Oh, they were fun, you know, those record store meets. They were always great. Of course, you don't do them anymore because they don't have record stores. But that was always great, you know. And quite often we'd do it the afternoon before the show. It was a chance, you know, to meet people and, you know, put people on the guest list and, you know, do little things like that. You know, people... Like, you never forget that, you know, and that's why it's really important, you know, when bands, they go out and do these meet and greets, it's really important, you know, they make an effort and smile a bit and be personable, because it's nothing to them, but it means everything to the person, you know, that has gone out of their way, gotten on the bus and stood in line for 2 hours to say hi, you know, and I've always appreciated that.
You know, I guess the meet and greets from the record stores don't happen now, but a lot of bands spend time now after the show to personally get, you know, with the fans, more so, I think, than they once did. Is that kind of something you guys do now?
We can't do that, unfortunately. You know, there was a time when we could come out afterwards and hang with the fans, but it's crazy. You know, honestly, people, not all of them, but all it takes is just a handful of, you know, drunk assholes. You know, someone's jealous because his girlfriend likes the bass player. It doesn't end well, and we kind of have a thing in our... a clause in our insurance that we're not actually allowed to do it.
Oh, that's too bad.
What we do is we have a very civilized, orderly meet and greet, a sound check, and it's a paid meet and greet, but you get a lot for it. It's just a little less hectic and yelly, and you know, I'm when we're on tour, I've got to do a lot of shows in a row back to back, you know, and me going out and shouting above the PA and high-fiving and doing shots, those were the days, let me tell you. I love doing that, but it's a little bit different now.
You know what, actually, we've done those meet and greets too. It's a sound check and those are great too. They really are, because you know, the band does. You guys always seem to be really grateful to the people that you know, want to spend the time with you, and that you know, we mean enough to meet you. And you always do really. Bands always seem to really, really give back in that moment.
I hope so. I want to be that band. You know, I don't want to be the asshole band. I want to be the band. You know, the down to earth, just regular guys. You know. You know, but you know, like legends. You know, we've been doing this for such a long time. You know, we're lifers, and you know, I get it. It's I think people come to meet and greets just pinch to see if we're actually really real and we're not hologram. But yeah, it's changed a lot. What about the new record? What do you guys think?
You know, a killer new record. It's got a really mature feel and sound to it. And, you know, it feels like you guys are getting some stuff off your chest, certainly.
It certainly does, but it also it has, among other interviews, according to other scribes and journalists, it has a very punk energy to it.
That's exactly what I thought when I listened to it. It was a little more gritty and punkish, yeah. It's definitely another step from the missing piece. So, like, I saw what you were starting there, and this is kind of that next evolution.
Yeah. Well, you know, the missing piece was a record that had been... Tracy had had these ideas floating around before our reunion, whereas the Devil... was a lot like Cocked and Loaded, was absolutely written by all of us from scratch. I've got a lot more emotionally invested in it than perhaps the first one. And another difference, it's a punkier record than The Missing Piece for sure. That's down to Tracy. The Missing Piece is lush. It's dripping with strings and embellishments and stuff going on that you have to put some headphones on to really hear what's going on. The Devil, there's none of that. It's just really all good. It's just a band, a three piece band and me singing. and you can definitely tell.
You know, and absolutely, because I mean, we were talking about that. We were wondering, you know, the punk influence on it. Who's kind of, where did that come from? Is that Tracy? I mean, he's done some punk work.
Tracy. Yeah. I give Tracy. Yeah, he loves that Misfits and Black Flag and all that. You know, he's big disciple of the early '80s LA punk scene. And it definitely shows in his music. He's obviously a virtuoso guitar player, so, you know, he's not going to play like Steve Jones. It's a cross between, I don't know, like Eddie Van Halen and Animal.
And yet he is your other side, you know. It's without the two of you together, just happened to click and make such magical
that's
music.
That's it, the chemistry, you know. And you know, I'm a big Queen fan, and I was around the real punk scene in London when it blew up, but it musically it didn't, you know, really do that much for me. But it sure affected Tracy.
So what is it when you're on stage with Tracy that just feels right then?
It's hard to explain. I think it's a. He makes me work. He makes me work really hard because I don't know any other guitar player that works as hard as he does. You know, when he's focused, when he's writing, recording, gigging, he's just 110,000% into it, focused, and he brings that out. In his players, he brings it out in Johnny, brings it out in Shane, and he's always brought it out in me. And I like that. You know, I don't want to be lazy. I don't want, you know, to be, you know, I like a challenge, and it's always challenging with him.
You know, I was thinking about that, how I don't know that Tracy's ever really gotten the due as a player that he deserves.
He's fucking incredible. I mean, he's been playing since he was 10 years old, and he plays all day. I mean, he just does not stop, and he's enthusiastic about a new guitar today as he was when he was 17. And it's great. It's infectious. It's great to be around.
Now, in this case, you talked about Johnny and Shane, and I'm wondering, like, are they kind of consistent members of the band now? You think that they'll be with you for a while?
It was when we agreed to do the reunion. I insisted that the lineup stay the same. I was so impressed with Johnny and Shane and the work that they were doing with Tracy. I didn't want to go back and call old members, and I didn't want to audition. I really wanted Johnny and Shane because they're brilliant and they're fun to be around. And you know, Tracy already they bonded. They know each other. They know each other musically, and you know, I see it as a bridge. You know, a bridge crossing over a river. You know, there's an old bridge that was built a long time ago, and it served the community well. But it got old and outdated, so they needed to build a new bridge. And it's a bridge built parallel right next to it, and then it's a more modern, stronger, high-tech bridge. But it's still the same bridge, and that's how I see LA Guns, past and present. It's the same. It's a different bridge, but it's the same. It's me and Tracy with this new generation of musicians. And hungry young musicians. It just reminds me so much of the early days. We didn't want to do a nostalgia act. We didn't want to put the old band together. We did that. We've already done that. And it was fun for a while. But honestly, you know, we don't fuck around. Chase is on such a roll right now musically. He's just banging out song after song, and we're all about, you know, the future, and we appreciate the past, but that's what we're focused on right now.
Yeah, because I think it would be really important. I mean, knowing the history of LA Guns and stuff like that, I think it would be really important to kind of maintain stability, but and also just really get to know like the ins and outs of everybody and the way they play and what they bring.
Yeah, when I recorded the Missile piece, I really didn't know Johnny and Shane that well, you know. We'd done a few shows, a couple of months of touring, but now I've been on the road for 2 or 3 years. So, you know, that's why this record is a little bit more personal to me. I'm a bit more involved in it than I was in the first one and the last one.
Now you talk about Tracy writing a lot of songs. Does that mean that you'll have another album ready in another year and a half?
You know, if we had to, it wouldn't surprise me a bit. I don't think it's. I think, you know, the fact that we already proved that we can do it. Hopefully, he'll pull the reins a little bit because you know I don't even know if we could add another record. What kind of a live set that we would have with three new records, you know, sort of overbalances it a little bit. So no, I don't think so. Chase has got his eye on projects, solo projects, and producing other bands and stuff. He's going to stay busy, but I think we might be done for a while, at least a year or two.
So that interests me. Like when you talk about Tracy doing a solo project, like. Is it just the fact that now, like, you know, you're used to working together, so it's kind of cool for somebody to go off and do a solo project? Is that just something that, because I could imagine tensions arising from that, but you know, how is it for you now?
No, not at all. It doesn't bother me. You know, like, just knowing Tracy, he just writes all the time, and he wants to produce, he wants to co-write with other people. And that's fine. Doesn't bother. As long as his heart is in it, and when we're together, when we're recording, when we're playing, I can tell. You know, if he's half-assed, then no. That if it was a distraction, that would bother me. But so far, it all seems good.
You know, I know on this album you were talking about how it's a pissed off album. There's a quote out there from you about it. So was it kind of cathartic to do an album like this then?
It was a lot of fun. You know, people ask, is it autobiographical? Yes and no. I mean, no, it's you know, it's not specifically about certain people, but over a course of time, you know, like you build up a vibe and then when he hands us the music, it's interpretive, you know. It always starts with the music, and then we add the lyrics afterwards. And it's just the attitude of the music that we were getting was the defining factor in putting lyrics. Adding lyrics to it, you know. There's no love songs on there. There's just no place for that. It's angry little masterpiece.
Now, is it more fun to perform kind of angrier, faster songs on tour?
Yeah. Yes, it is. You know, I love the Ballad of Jane, but oh, God. It's just like I'm on autopilot, you know, waving my arms in the air. You know, don't get me wrong, you know, that song's been good to me. It's been it's wonderful, but I'd much rather play Killing Machine.
Nice. You know, and there's no ballad on this album. That was one of the first things in the first listen to. I was like, there's no ballad.
Another Season in Hell, it's got a ballady vibe to it.
Yeah,
that's as close as you get.
A little slower. Yeah, Needle to the Bone, I think, is my favorite track on the album.
Tight. Just tight as a drum. And just I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you know, there's some really really strong stuff, and then once it hits Needle to the Bone, you know, for me it just really kicks in and everything kind of, you know, I've completely gotten where you're going at that point.
Oh,
sure.
Good. I appreciate that, and as I said, my first thing to you guys is we really really appreciate the support.
Is there any pressure, do you think, to yourself when you're making an album? It's like you want to try something new, you want to be true to where you are right now, but you also want to keep the core fan base happy, or do you just have to let that go and be your own, be what you are, and do your thing?
Option three, you know, don't think about it. Don't go into it thinking, well, are we going to do something like, or are we going to do something new, or, you know, no, just go get your feet wet, you know, do the music. And let it flow, let it do its own thing, and then it will take shape. When you get a few songs, a couple of songs together, then the album starts to take shape, and then you know where you're going with it. That's how it's worked on these last two records.
Now, one thing I got to comment about to you, Phil, is the covers. Like, I absolutely adore the cover to the new album, and love the fact that you've kind of gone from that first album, and then you did something similar with The Missing Piece, and now you've taken it that extra step. I think that's just so awesome and really neat looking.
That's awesome, and you know what? The artist, the girl that painted The Missing Piece and The Devil, you know, and Made in Milan, is actually sleeping in the room upstairs from me. And she's amazing, my wife, Kayla.
You're kidding.
She is so incredibly talented, and she really gets it. We've been partners now she was involved. We started work on Hollywood Forever, and when I was in that last lineup with Steve and Stacy and Scotty Griffin, she's been collaborating and she's been doing the artwork, and she does a fantastic job. She'll be so happy when I tell her that you said that. You know, it means a lot to her, and it's great. We're really lucky to have her.
Oh, please, yeah. Give her all our compliments, because I mean, I just, it's so cool. I love the tie-in. Just, you know, it's great.
Yeah, no, she gets it. Now, originally, we had the Orchid titles, you know. That was going to be called Wasn't Tomorrow Great? As a working title, and then we changed, that wasn't right because it was, you know, we didn't want the word great in it, and then we changed it to Gravity's in Control, which is a strong lyric in one of the songs, and then, you know, we were like, you know, thinking, what can we do visually with that? So, you know, it's the space theme and the guy in the space suit above the earth, and our manager's like, Scotty Ludwig says, what the fuck are you guys doing, man? It's just like, give me something I can work with here, give me something, you know, like visual, you know, and he was like, right, you know, we thought about it, and how about The Devil, you know, bingo, you got it, and that's, you know, that you can do something that visually, and once we got that title, and we agreed on it, everything really fell into place, and it was the perfect title for the album, and the artwork soon followed.
Does she have other work out there that we could take a look at?
Oh, yeah. She's an eminent portrait artist, and she does commissions, and she's always working. Yeah, she's a professional painter.
Well, we may have some work for her.
Yeah, please do. She's good. Pets and loved ones, you name it.
No, you know what? We actually got a graphic novel about a band in the Sunset Strip in the 80s, and we've been looking for a cover artist. So that's
she's your man.
You have to let us know how we can get a hold of her, because
I certainly will.
That would be extremely cool. So
yeah.
So I'm interested, like, you know, because I mean, when Mo talks about our graphic novel, it's about the Sunset Strip. So how much does the Sunset Strip kind of influence your music?
You know, when I first got the opportunity to become to get involved in that Sunset Strip scene, it was literally like dying and going to heaven. I was over in drab London, and it was, you know, I was getting very frustrated over there. And so to come over to LA and just the hedonism and the debauchery and just it couldn't help but influence your music, you know. And if it didn't, then you were in the wrong place, and you should go up to Alaska and write Queensryche songs, because it was such a vibe. It was such a trashy, you know. I mean, I'm not a big fan of Motley Crue, but that "Girls, Girls, Girls" song, that was pretty much the soundtrack to what was going on.
Because I'm trying to actually understand the timeline for you, because I think it was like 1979, something like that. Girl had its first album. Is it about that time? And
no, the album came out in 1980. We put the band together in 79, and it just seems like 100 years ago. And all the times, it doesn't seem that long at all. but yeah, that was my apprenticeship.
Yeah, and then you went from that to Torme and Human Torpedoes, I think, was it?
Yeah, there's the local band. We never released anything. Just, you know, doing local stuff.
And then Torme, had you moved to America by the time that one came out?
No, you know, me and Bernie, we got together and we made a great record and we put a great band together, and we did amazing shows in the English London scene, in like Europe stuff. But the record companies were scared to death. They wouldn't sign us. They wanted Boy George, they wanted Duran Duran, they wanted Culture Club, you know. They were scared of rock and roll in London at that time. And it makes me wonder if even Guns N' Roses would have got signed, because these cunts at the labels were just so adamant about keeping control and not having rock and roll upstarts fucking with their industry. It was a real relief to get out, move to LA, and go back a year later, with a gold album under my belt, going to the same people, the same A&R people. Now, fuck you.
You know what? So you got there a year later. It must have been pretty quickly after you got there that, I guess, you know, was the band signed when you replaced, who was it, Paul Black, I think?
No, not quite. They were just about to get signed, and he was high on heroin at the meeting with the label and the attorneys, and they were just about to sign the contract, and he nodded out.
Holy shit, really?
And the A&R guy, Bob Scorro, said, "What's this? The fuck's going on here?" We would have to call the paramedics, we have to call emergency. So they woke him up, and Bob Scorro's like, "Look, the deal's still pending, but you've got to find a singer." So we were in limbo for 6-8 months. To make sure that I was the right guy and that I wasn't going to nod out his office as well. You know, it was pending, but we were dealless for a good 8 months when I first joined.
Wow. Yeah, I think that that one of the things, and I mean, I'm familiar with what Paul sounds like as well, but I think in this case, like, your voice is so distinct, and you just bring something so, you know, kind of refreshing to that scene, and next to nobody has ever tried to duplicate what you bring to that. So I think that, I'm not sure that LA Guns could have been LA Guns I mean, it certainly couldn't be really without you.
Yeah, I mean, it was. Yeah, I'd wind it up for sure. You know, it was dark. It was very grungy. It was hard to understand what Paul was saying. It was more of a vibe, and you know, like a sort of Jane's Addiction almost. You know, it was a strange, harrowing sound that Paul produced with the band. And that was cool, but it, you know, that wasn't for me. I had to brighten it up, you know, because you know, like there was some, like Sex Action and Never Enough. They were already in the band set, but they were completely different songs that Paul had written the lyrics to. And when they first asked me to join the band, I said, "Okay, send me some of your stuff." And I was listening to it, and I couldn't understand what the fuck he was singing. I couldn't understand it. So I was like, "Hey, do you mind if I just rewrite it and do it for my voice?" And Tracy's like, "Yeah, man, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's how we got Sex Action and Never Enough, which is better than Looking Over My Shoulder."
You know, we love hearing about these stories. I guess we're nearing the end of our time. Unfortunately, it feels like there's just so much to dive into there. But I did want to ask you, do you remember, you know, your very first night where you went out on the Sunset Strip to experience it?
I remember it vividly, you know, and I just got there like on a weeknight, like a Tuesday or Wednesday. So and my hotel was pretty close to the Rainbow, so I walked up there, and it's kind of a quiet night. But I knew I was in for an adventure. And then, you know, after, you know, hanging out with the band and meeting their friends and their girlfriends and their social circles, It was an unforgettable time, a great scene. Awesome.
Well, you know what? We're definitely, like I said, our graphic novel is called Kings of the Strip, and we would definitely love to talk about getting that cover done and get you a copy. We're doing our best to honor you guys as best we can, be as true as we can.
I'll get her email to you through Karen, okay?
That would be fantastic. But...
All right, that's awesome. Yeah, she'll do whatever you want. I guarantee you'll be happy.
All right. Well, Phil, tell all the fans where they can find the Devil You Know and just all about where they can find LA Guns.
Well, you can find us in ether. Just type in LA Guns, the missing piece, or the Devil You Know, and we just made a video 3 nights ago in LA for the Devil You Know, and hopefully that's going to be launched in the next week or so. So we're not hard to find.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
Well, Phil Lewis, you are a wonderful guest, a wonderful singer.
Awesome.
And
thank you. Great talking to you guys. I appreciate the support.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks so much for all you do, because we're still going to keep following you for another 30 years, right?
Awesome. That's great, guys. I look forward to seeing you.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Phil.